Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, partnering with donors from all walks of life to improve Southeastern Virginia through grants, scholarships, and leadership initiatives. Learn more at hamptonroadscf.org.
Hello, everyone. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. Well, today's Another View is for everyone. Those of us who are 65 years or older, and those who one day may join the senior crowd. What kind of senior are you or aspire to become? Are you a traveler, lifelong learner, engaged with young people, determined to live life to the fullest? Or are you lonely, full of regrets, mad at your physical ailments, scared of dying? Up next on Another View, the challenges and the joys of growing older with grace. Retired nurse and educator and current author Dr. Carolyn Stegman joins us right after this national, regional, and local news from NPR and WHRO News.
Discussing today's topics from an African-American perspective, this is Another View.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Another View. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. We begin today's Another View with a tribute to former Norfolk City Council member Paul Riddick, who passed away this week. Our Lisa Godley has the story.
Paul Riddick served on Norfolk City Council for 3 decades. Elected leaders from Norfolk, state politics, and national were quick to share their thoughts about Paul Riddick. Virginia House Speaker Don Scott offered his condolences, stating that Hampton Roads lost a giant. He referred to Riddick as part of a generation of leaders who kicked down doors so people like me could walk through them. Councilman J.P. Page, who took over Riddick's Ward 4 seat in 2022, said Paul Riddick stepped in, showed up, inspired, and gave people hope. Paul Riddick graduated from Booker T. Washington High School in 1966, and after high school attended Norfolk State University for several years before getting married and leaving. He would go on to work at his family's funeral business, but serving his community was a calling. He served as president of the local NAACP, leading a legal charge against the school board to end busing, a case the Virginia Supreme Court refused to hear. His community activism included serving on many boards, including the Southside Task Force and the Church Street Huntersville Development Committee. Paul Riddick was also a member of the Southeastern Tidewater Opportunity Project, or STOP, and an alternate for the Hampton Roads Regional Jail Authority. Congressman Bobby Scott describes Riddick's passing as a tremendous loss for the city of Norfolk. He says Paul Riddick brought a deep understanding of his community and an unwavering determination to improve the lives of his constituents. Circumstances surrounding his death are not clear at this time, but friends and colleagues say Riddick had been battling health issues for a while. Paul Riddick was 78. Another View would like to express heartfelt sympathy and our deepest condolences to the Riddick family and the former councilman's many colleagues, friends, and constituents.
And we, again, extend our sincere condolences to the Riddick family. I had the pleasure of working with Mr. Riddick on many occasions, and he will be missed. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Our guest today lives on the eastern shore of Maryland. For years, she taught the psychology of death, dying, and bereavement, and the psychology of aging at Salisbury University. She's still teaching these subjects for the Association of Lifelong Learning, a continuing education program for older persons. For 7 years, she wrote a column for the Daily Times on diversity and interpersonal relationships, tackling issues of racism, sexism, and ageism. She's written three books, Women of Achievement in Maryland History, the novel A Gold Mended Life, and her latest book is called The Sages of Oak Place, a novel about the reframing of aging in a community called Oak Place, where elders live fully in an atmosphere that values their often unsung yet extraordinary lives. Please welcome to Another View, Dr. Carolyn Stegman. Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
Hi, Barbara. It's very glad to be here. It's an honor to be on your show. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. So I have to tell you, my mother, one of her favorite sayings was always, growing older, never old. Do you agree with that sentiment?
I sure do. I believe that it's also a mental process, and that the more that we're active and taking care of our health, the more positive our senior years can be. And that's what a place like Oak Place was developed for. We need Oak Place because it has services. It has so many times we think that giving people, older people, more pills and more procedures is going to make them healthier. And in the last 100 years, we've gone from living to 47 years on an average to almost 80 on an average.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there comes a time, Barbara, when pills don't do it anymore. You know, you can give them 10 or 20 pills and it doesn't do it. And a procedure, you can fix their hip, you can fix their heart, you can fix some bones and stuff like that. But there comes a time when you can't do it.
Yeah. That,
and what we need to give to older people is services, like a ramp to their house if they are using a walker or a cane. Because a lot of times houses become like jails. They can't get in and out of them. And things like ramps are not covered by Medicare and Medicaid. And also Meals on Wheels and day centers where they can come and socialize with each other and stop with the loneliness and the isolation that so often plagues them because their friends have died or their spouses or partners have died.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't do this enough in the United States, and therefore sometimes aging can become a very miserable time where people just curl up and wait for their final curtain call, and we don't want that to happen.
Exactly. And you know, I mean, you see that they're either, you know, real go-getters, life is wonderful, they're having a great time, or you might find those that are sad and lonely and don't want to move forward. How much does our life experiences before we become seniors help us approach how we're going to live in our senior years? How important is that?
I think it's important, but it's not the most important thing. We can change that. I mean, I've seen people live alone at home with their old avocado kitchens. I mean, they haven't renovated their home in 50 years. They want to die in their own bed, which is, you know, and sometimes we look at them and say, wait a minute, if you go to a place like Oak Place, it's going to be like a dormitory where people can run up and down the halls and say, does anybody want coffee or a piece of, you know, coffee cake or something like that? It's going to bring out, you know, your aliveness, that your potential's there. And so a lot of people will say, okay, I'll try it. I'll just try it. And then you know what they do, Barbara? They come back several weeks or a couple months later and they said, I should have done this years ago. And all of a sudden, they see the world as open instead of, you know, so what? They're in their own bed, but they're all alone in their own bed.
Yeah.
In a place like Oak Place, it's not that way. We got social workers and physical therapy. We got everything.
So let's talk about the book, The Sages of Oak Place. It's a novel. But in the novel, what I found so unique about it, Carolyn, was that how you intertwined issues that seniors face and deal with through the characters. And the characters are really special. So tell us about the book.
Okay. Well, when I was teaching psychology of aging and psychology of death and dying, I really believed in storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that instead of giving a student a test to say rigor mortis is A, B, C, D, or none of the above, that's sort of rote memorization. I wanted them to really experience aging. So I had them interview old people, not just once, but six times over the course of 6 weeks to really get inside their head, to ask about their lives from the simple things like, what did you do on your first dates, or what was your first car? To the more complex, like, What are your biggest regrets? What do you feel you accomplished most in your life? And one of the most wonderful evaluations that I ever got from a student was that after he finished that experience, he said, I'm going to go home and get to know my grandparents better.
Hmm.
And I thought, wow, you know, so again, what I did was I took that storytelling mm-hmm. and the theory of aging and I gave it characters.
Yes.
And I just love that. So I could cover the issues, but giving it a character. And the characters are spicy and outrageous sometimes,
mm-hmm.
much like maybe my grandmother was, although maybe I don't know all the stories about her. But anyway, it brings alive that these people were once alive and vibrant. And they still are. We need to talk to them and find out what their story is.
So let me ask you then, based on your research and the work that you've done and all, some people say that if you are an older person, you should be around other younger people because that's what keeps you young, as opposed to, and then there's a group that say, no, I want to live in a senior community because those are people who understand what I've been through and they understand where my head is right now. Is there one that's necessarily better than the other in terms of what you choose?
Yeah, I like both. At Oak Place, you're surrounded by your colleagues and your peers of your own generation and age.
Right.
But also, there's a grandparent program, so you can get to know your grandchildren better. There's actually an Upward Bound school there. So in other words, we intermingle intergenerational and bring those into Oak Place. And so I believe that both
mm-hmm.
are very significant, and that keeping in touch with the younger generation is very important, especially if they're your relatives and your grandchildren. They need to know you.
757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers to call to join our conversation. How are you approaching growing older? How are you approaching your senior years? Or if you're already there, where are you in your journey? Give us a call because we'd love to hear your story. 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. So Oak Place, Carolyn, is it's a fictional place. It's also a nonprofit. Most of the places where you can go and live now, communities that are oriented towards seniors, especially those on the high end, are definitely not nonprofit. You created a space where it's much more inclusive.
Yes, I wanted it that way because, you know, good care for the elderly is not reserved for the rich and famous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. And I didn't want Oak Place to be that kind of place. I wanted it to be not only intergenerational, but diverse.
Yeah.
And inclusive. DEI, so to speak. Yes. It still exists in my book and it still exists within me. And so therefore, because bringing these people together, I thought was very, very important in getting to know each other and so on. And you find that people did intermingle. In one part of the book, an interracial gay couple starts a book club that mm-hmm. deals with racism. And they read books by Black and white authors that deal with racism. And then afterwards, they have an ethnic dinner that speaks of where they came from and so on like that. So, again, they break bread together and they talk to each other.
Yeah.
And I love things like that happening at Oak Place. I think it's very important. And as far as the nonprofit, Oak Place is run a lot by volunteers. For instance, there's a lot of animals there. And by mm-hmm. the way, animals are very important in life. When you see somebody who lives alone, especially on the Eastern Shore, they could be down a long driveway and they don't have access to other people, but they have a dog or a cat. And it becomes very important to them. And so Oak Place believes in that. It even has a miniature horse. And mm-hmm. The residents help take care of them. They help bring money in to feed them, just like what we're doing on the Eastern Shore here in Maryland. When we have Meals on Wheels and take food out to people, we also have Pets on Wheels. We take food out to their pets.
Oh, wow.
Because a lot of times we were feeding the elder who was giving half of their lunch or dinner to their dog.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And so we started Pets on Wheels because we realized how important those animals are. We have seen when a pet dies that often the older person doesn't live much longer after that. They have lost, again, a very significant part of their lives.
Yeah.
So it's really important.
You know, and you don't shy away from tough issues in the book also. For example, I'm thinking about the gentleman who decided that once he got his cancer diagnosis, that he was going to take his ending into his own hands.
Yes. You know, suicide is very big with older. The most significant population rise in suicide is older adults over 80, particularly white men over 80. And
what's going on there?
Chronic diseases, terminal illness, loneliness, isolation, late life depression. You know, people that have never been depressed in their life, all of a sudden in their older years can get depressed. And sometimes it masks as Alzheimer's, but it's not Alzheimer's. It's called pseudo-dementia or depression. And the contributing factors are isolation, pain, loneliness. When you look at the chronic diseases that older people can get, dementia, diabetes, cancer, arthritis, heart disease, and so on like that, some of them, particularly men, just say, I ain't going to go through this.
Yeah.
And that was that significance of that gentleman. And that's why I brought it in. Because even in a place like Oak Place, he didn't want to go through the last weeks of his life in pain and suffering. And so he decided to end it on himself. I've seen that a lot. And we're trying to, again, get people treated for late life depression, get them on medication, get them into talk therapy or whatever. It used to be that some of those people said, I need to pray more, go to church more. And now we can, through working with ministers and priests and so on, we can say, God has answered your prayers by giving you psychologists and social workers and doctors who will help you treat your depression
you
so that you can get past this.
Yeah. 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers to call to join our conversation. Maggie joins us from Jessup, Maryland. Hi, Maggie. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Maggie. How are you doing?
I'm just doing super. I had to call because a lot of people don't realize just how important this book is. I was talking to some friends who had moved into a retirement community, and then they had to move away because they said, these people are too busy being old. I cannot stay here. They said, they're old, but I can't be that. They said, when the big discussion of the day is where to go, what they're having for dinner, and what time they're going in the building, that it wasn't for them. And Carolyn, I want you to talk about some of the studies that you did with your students and teaming them up with older people and how in so many cases it has developed into real friendships.
Yeah, and speaking of real friendships, I was going to say, just before you speak, Carolyn, speaking of real friendships, Maggie and I have been friends for more years than we can count. Thank you for calling in, Maggie. We appreciate you. Carolyn, go ahead.
I think that one of the things about nursing homes or assisted living or even senior living is that there's no activities there. So they just go and sometimes stay inside their room. I mean, if you don't get your butt out the front door, it's going to be a very, very lonely existence. So that when you're finally talking to somebody, you're doing an organ recital. Oh, I got this ache and this pain and so on like that. As opposed to, you know, having a piano bar, you know, where you can sip a cappuccino and wine, and where you have animals and a chance to volunteer and book clubs and, you know, all the things that can happen. And that's where the extra effort comes in. But every old person is worth that extra effort, I swear. It can put a smile on their face and make their life seem like they still have meaning and purpose. Because once you lose that, once you sit down in your lazy boy chair and start watching reruns of Family Feud, you're dead, even if you're still breathing.
You
got to keep going. And I think it's the obligation of the nursing home, the assisted living, or Oak Place to do that, to provide the services that these people need that would make them want to be motivated to get out of their apartment and go do something else.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for everybody. I'll be honest with you. But for a lot of people, it does.
It does.
It really does.
Carolyn, tell us about Stella.
Oh,
and where did she come from?
She she's a lot of characters.
She is.
You know what she is? Writing your story, the death of an elder is like the burning of a library. And Stella would have gone to her grave had Catherine and other people, the FBI, not shown up to find out and peel the onion pieces back and forth to uncover a life that was so significant. You know, a lot of times we think that the only reason you write your story is because, you got a Nobel Peace Prize or you went to the moon. I don't care about that. The backbone of America is the ordinary people who did extraordinary things. And Stella was one of those. And we would have never known if she hadn't told her story. She would have gone to the grave. And how many people do that? We don't know what they did. I just had a friend who uncovered a diary that had been 30 years in her attic. And it talks about how her father-in-law was an MIA in the Philippines and he was shot down.
Wow.
Nobody ever knew that in the family. And he's been dead for since 1986. Mm. These are the stories we want to tell and why it's so important. And that's what Stella is. She's the untold story of so many of our grandparents or now our parents. I mean, I'm 80 years old and there's things I wish I could still ask my mother,
Absolutely.
But I can't because it's over.
The book is called The Sages of Oak Place. It's a novel by Carolyn Stegman. And we are talking about growing older with grace here on Another View. I want to take a call from Caitlin. She is with the Senior Services of Southeastern Virginia. And I believe you guys have something special going on, Caitlin.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure.
Hi, how are you, Carolyn?
I'm fine.
Thanks so much for sharing all the stories in the book. It's on my list, and I intend to tell everyone who will listen about it.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Sure. So right now at Senior Services, we have a campaign going on called Help Us Say Yes. You know, the senior population is rising all across America right now, and with that comes the need of food insecurity. We have transportation issues. We have social isolation. So the campaign that we have going on right now is intended to raise money to help us breach that gap that we have.
Okay. And so this will help to expand things like Meals on Wheels and things of that nature. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. Meals on Wheels. We have our transportation. We have a senior companion program, our homeless older adult program. We also have welcome home baskets. So it's really intended to bridge many of those gaps due to the low socioeconomic status and also just the way the world is going right now. You know, the price of fuel, the price of food, the price of rent and those types of things.
Mm-hmm. So all the things that Carolyn has been talking about, are those the same types of issues that you're dealing with at SEVA?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have 11 senior centers across our service area. And I was just thinking, you know, they want to tell their story. They want to connect with people who are like-minded and similar. One of our senior centers a couple weeks ago actually did a show and tell. And as much as they, you know, moaned and complained, it ended up being a really great time. They got to share a part of their story that maybe they hadn't thought about. And some people said it was childish, you know, initially, but I think it really helped them kind of connect with who they used to be and who they still can be.
Okay. Any advice, Carolyn, for Caitlin?
Yes. I just taught a course on death and dying. It was called Why is Talking About Death Like Staring at the Sun? Meaning it's painful. And the first thing I had them do was their obituary. And at first they really balked. And yet it turned out to be not so maudlin as one would think. They started thinking of their legacy and what they wanted to tell their grandchildren and what was important to them. It wasn't a resume like graduated in 1984 and did this and did that. I mean, you know, as so many boring obituaries are, but it was like, you know, I got so much gratification out of delivering Meals on Wheels or out of being the coach of my granddaughter's Little League team or whatever. It made me feel that by the time I was done reading it, or by the time they were done reading it themselves, which they did, I knew so much more about that inner person and who they really were. So yes, there are so many exercises you can get them to do that a lot of them haven't ever thought about before. And while it might scare them a little bit at first, it won't later.
Yeah. Caitlin, how do people contribute if they want to help out?
If they want to log on to our website, it's SSSEVA. So think seniors times three. Mm-hmm. E as in elephant, V as in Victor, A as in apple, .org. And go to our ways to give page. It's all the way on the right hand side. And then they'll click the link that says help us say yes. And that money goes to our ever increasing waiting list for things like meals, transportation, companion support, and things like that. That list is about 100 to 150 and ever growing every day.
Okay.
I love that. Yeah.
Yes.
So
thank
you. The area agent on aging here in the Eastern Shore has all kinds of opportunities at nonprofits, like they could work at the library or the Red Cross or something like that. Mm-hmm. And also they can get employment through the Older Americans Act that'll help give them some supplemental income, which a lot of elderly people need.
Thank you, Caitlin, for the call. We appreciate it. And best of luck to you all going forward. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Aging with Grace with Dr. Carolyn Stegman, author of The Sages of Oak Place, 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Alexis joins us from Hampton. Hi, Alexis. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Hi, Alexis.
Hi. Well, I'm 68, retired too early 4 years ago. And yes, I know you can go, yippee, volunteer here, you know, hook up with 10 friends there and do well. Well, I'm an introvert.
No way.
No.
You're talking on the radio. You're not an introvert.
Oh, brother. Don't remind me. Oh, boy. But I'm wondering what I have seen. I do go to a senior exercise class and have, you know, casual social engagements. And that's enough typically for me. But, yes, my husband's been gone 4 years. I am kind of lonely, kind of at peace. It depends on how I want to describe it at the time. But one thing I've noticed that's profound is we do not seem to accept aging. We don't seem to accept that death is coming. I mentioned in the intro call, oh gosh, poor old Mitch McConnell there looking all wizened and in his rehab facility saying, I'm coming back to this job.
Yes, right, yeah. Right.
There is a quote I like, and then I won't keep you. It's from Lewis Carroll, Alice in Wonderland. She's looking on, you know, what do I do? She asked the king, and he says, begin at the beginning, the king said gravely, and go on until you come to the end, then stop.
Wow.
It's like we don't have a stop. As a cancer nurse, I noticed we had patients coming in on literally the last day of their lives. Little skeletons in wheelchairs demanding another dose of chemo for one more dime in the meter.
Wow.
Rather than going home and spending it with their family.
With their family. Mm. Well, Alexis,
hold on, so what do you think about the acceptance thing?
Yeah, I'm going to let Carolyn answer that. And Alexis, we want you hopefully to stay positive and get those friends and keep reaching out. Okay.
Yes, and there's also a lot of research jobs that you can do helping boards of aging to look at some things. There's some things that you can do in your introversion that would be very helpful to a lot of organizations. Alexis, I believe we live in a very age-phobic society, and we do not treat it well. Old is ugly. It is bad. It's wrinkles, unattractive, even repugnant. You know, sometimes we're afraid to touch old people because, you know, they might be wearing last night's dinner, especially if they're of the very old, or dribbling a little bit of urine, so we don't touch them. And a lot of times old people die of a disease, what I like to call skin hunger, the lack of being touched. And even though the death certificate says heart disease, no, it's loneliness and isolation. And we, this is all born out of fear of death, you know, because let's face it, I'm 80 years old. I know death in my neighborhood. I don't know when I'm going to die or even what I'm going to die of. But I do know that I've lived most of my life. Mm-hmm. And I am trying to finish all my business and do stuff like that. But when I sometimes watch TV and I see all the potions and the Botox and a wrinkle is a kiss of death. Like you're somehow less of a person because you have that. I look at that and I say, this is age phobia. You know, even with sex, you know, if you see two old people holding hands, we'll often say, isn't that cute? You know, that's so demeaning. I mean, if they're in fourth grade, it's cute. But old people holding hands can surely show compassion and love and touching without being relegated to asexuality, that they don't are incapable of having sex. We don't see them as doing that anymore. And that's really a shame because there is no expiration date on when you should stop having sex, even solo sex, which I talk about in my book, because a lot of people are single. And we write this off, you know, sex is supposed to be 25-something, people sweating it up, you know, an athletic event, and they don't look at old people. That is very much derogatory. I know I probably answered too much of that question.
No. No, but you know, you bring up such good points, because that is also a part of how growing older is perceived. Because we are afraid to think about death, and younger people look at older people sometimes and go, no way, I'm not even trying to think about getting there because I'm living my life right now, you know. If we're blessed enough, you're going to grow older. So what do you say, Carolyn, then, to people who are trying to grapple with the fact that they may not be here much longer? Because death is inevitable, and it's something that I think we spend so much time in secrecy about, as opposed to, or being afraid of, as opposed to embracing it as yet the next step in our lives.
Right. I think we have to talk about it, because we haven't talked about it, you know. And a lot of times I know people have gone home and they filled out their advance directives or something like that, or their will, or whatever, mm-hmm. and they want to show it to their children, and their children don't want to talk about it, or they'll say, next year I'll do it, you know? I mean, if you're 85, you can't say next year, because you don't know what you're going to do at 80, where you're going to be at 86, not necessarily. So one needs to talk about it and desensitize to the fact that we are scared to talk about it. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be from a religious standpoint, because there are many, many people who believe they have some place to go, but there are also many people who believe that it's over.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I don't go into that. That's their own journey in terms of their religious beliefs or whatever. I just go into the fact that they need to make their journey. If they need to forgive somebody for something or thank them. You know, mm-hmm. it's so simple. When you're getting old, to look at somebody and say, I want to thank you for what you did back 30 years ago. You really helped change my life. Why don't we say things like that to people when they're alive? Why wait to the funeral when you can say it to their face?
Exactly.
And this is what people say. What do I say to them? What do I say to them? You know, if you go in to see a cancer patient, don't go in and say, oh, you look wonderful today. Isn't the weather lovely? I mean, we do everything we can to avoid talking about the fact that they have cancer and their life is very limited. And they, you know, they could go down in the next few weeks. Instead of just saying, you know, just thank you. I want to thank you for this and that, and get talking, or even forgiveness. Sometimes people need to do that. Old issues that are years and years old, finally people are seeking forgiveness or asking to forgive them. And finally expressing your love to somebody. I just think I can almost get tears in my eyes now just thinking of talking to somebody you care about and being able to tell them you love them before they die.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so important. Yes. And yes, you're going to cry. People are afraid they're going to lose it. They're going to lose their emotions. They're going to start sobbing, and they're really scared, especially men. You know, we've been taught, don't cry, be a John Wayne, be all this kind of stuff. And that's just utter nonsense that they can't express
their emotions, who they
are. But they're scared to do it. Yeah.
Now, you do have some seniors, Carolyn, who say, you know what, I'm 70 years old now. I'm going to speak my mind. I'm going to say what's on my mind. Growing older a permission slip to express yourself, maybe sometimes not so nicely.
Yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about that. I don't think you need to go down and say, I've always hated you. And, you know, I don't know what good it does, you know, and why you haven't said it or why you didn't, you know, resolve that years and years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of times if people have been jerks in their most of their life, they're going to be jerks as old people, too.
So how you live your younger life will impact.
I think so. If you've been a nice, kind, loving person most of your life, I think you're going to go down that way.
I know
for Alzheimer's patients, they talk about those that have worked with their hands and been nice and so on will tend to handle Alzheimer's better than others. I don't know how much the statistics bear out on that. But when I'm preparing to get Alzheimer's, which I am because my father died of Alzheimer's and so did my grandmother, I'm thinking, you know, it's a pretty nice person. I want to be nice when I can't look at myself in the mirror and know who I'm looking at.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if I had to have a caregiver for that. Caregiving is hard. And, you know, we do a lot of caregiving, and mostly women.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a hard, stressful, financially stressful job, especially taking care of an Alzheimer's patient who can walk out the front door in a heartbeat and you don't know where they are.
Do you live alone?
I do not. I have a husband.
Oh, okay.
And I have two granddaughters that are close by and lots of friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. So good. Okay. I didn't want you to be by yourself, especially knowing your history there, that if Alzheimer's is a concern. Have you had any testing done or is there any?
It's interesting, Barbara. I have not. I'm not sure I want to find out. I'm just going to take it day by day.
I understand that.
I also know that if I reach 85, that, you know, my chances are upwards to 50% of getting Alzheimer's disease. So it's not only the fact that I have a history, but it's also age is a big risk factor in Alzheimer's. Let's put it that way. So the older you are, the more chance you have of getting it. And it's a disease I don't want to get. But, you know, I have no choice.
So do you think that because baby boomers because there were so many of us, that some of societal things are changing in terms of aging now? For example, last night, my husband and I watched a delightful movie that was called The Thursday Murder Club, and all of the characters were seniors. You know, where once upon a time that would, you know, I can't remember when that would have happened. We do see a lot of the commercials now that while it's for mainly because of some pill that they want you to take, but it is seniors actually being active and so forth. Are we the generation that changed to say we're not the rocking chair ones, we're the ones who are going to be the jet setters?
Yeah. This chair rocks, baby, and we're going to show it. And that's what's happened with sexuality and, you know, all kinds of things like that. People now know what late life depression is, especially if they're close to a senior center and continuing education.
Yeah.
They can talk about sexuality and ageism and also loss. You know, death does not get easier with practice. And the first death that I ever witnessed when I was 16, the one I witnessed last week was just as hard, if not harder, because you don't know where you're lined up. So, yes, I think in terms of, let's just look at sex. I mean, here at 80-year-olds, what did we learn about sex from our parents? Well, like almost nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
You know, they can hardly talk about it, like, you know, birds and bees and stick figures.
Yeah.
And so, you know, now we can talk about it. We can talk about female orgasm for an 80-year-old, which happens. And we can talk about ED and what men can do about it. Or, you know, atrophic vaginitis, which is painful intercourse. And that's why most people give those things up. And the baby boomers have helped that to say, okay, we want to continue having sex. So let's, you know, what do we need here besides lubricant and other things like that and Viagra? And yes, I think the baby boomers have helped that. We still have a long way to go, though, because baby boomers themselves are pretty ignorant in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And they still are.
And they still are. So culturally, African Americans are usually less likely to place their loved ones in an assisted living environment. We tend to take care of our elderly at home. Is this changing as you in your research and the things that you're finding out now? Would more people, if they could afford an Oak Place, be moving to that type of living situation?
Yeah. I think that older Blacks are twice as likely as whites to receive care from family members. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons is that there's a big tradition of the culture of taking care of your loved ones, where Black families realize that their mothers or fathers worked very hard in order to help to raise us. And so that's culture and driven by family obligation and respect for elders. I think that that's wonderful in the Black community, mm-hmm. that we see that. And they are role models for the white community, by the way, to look at that. But it gets a little more complex in terms of you look at the amount of money and more, there are more Blacks in poverty, mm-hmm. Distrust of institutions, mm-hmm. Substandard care of Blacks that we've seen in the past. And all of those things need to be looked at. So, yes, Barbara, much less likely for a Black person to go into assisted living, mm-hmm. because it's not covered by Medicare or Medicaid, and it costs like $5,000 a month. And if you're living on a limited income, or with you have the Black community has many more people in poverty than the white community, they're not going to go into assisted living. And we're not going to see them go to nursing homes until later, till they're very old and can get on Medicaid or other things like that. And yet, we see that the Black population has a life expectancy that's lower than white.
Yeah.
Black men, their average length of life is 71. Black mm-hmm. women, 78. White women, 81 years. And Black white men are 76. So we need to look at that. That is a shame. We're looking at dementia much higher in the Black community. And mm-hmm. so are other chronic diseases like hypertension, diabetes, and so on. I think a lot of that is rooted in the disproportionality of prejudice and bigotry that they've had to face in their society, and those type of emotional issues that have plagued the Black community. Yeah. And it is something we need to change, because it's not a Black problem. It's everybody's problem. Old is old. And we need to treat everybody with dignity and respect, and we haven't done that.
You work with the Office of Aging. I know that's not the right name. I think it's called MAL, on the Eastern Shore. What are some of the challenges that you all see, and how are you dealing with those?
Well, it was the same thing that Caitlin brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Social isolation, transportation, like we run a senior center. And getting people there, a lot of older people don't drive anymore. So we need buses to get them there, and buses to get the Alzheimer's patients to a daycare center also. And so money is a big factor. We're constantly doing fundraisers. We're constantly looking at the Older Americans Act, which the funding hasn't changed so much. In other words, the funding this year is the same as last year, but inflation has increased. And mm-hmm. it under this administration, we've lost a lot of staff on very critical programs. And so I worry about the future for older people. There's going to be more older people with more demands, and we're barely going to cover those demands, let alone come up with a place like Oak Place that shines, that is utopian of what we can create. But it is worth it. It is worth shooting for the stars so we can get something like that. Because the alternative is horrible. Is the suffering of old people.
Yeah. What are some of the stereotypes that you wish would go away in regard to people who are 65 and older?
That they are old-fashioned, that they can't mm-hmm. stay current in various things, that their life is boring, that their lives have been boring. That they're not beautiful anymore, that they're not sexual anymore, that they're not compassionate anymore. Those are the type of things that I certainly don't want to be said about me. I mean, they're just not healthy, and it's not true.
Yeah.
It's totally not true.
Yeah,
it's all based. You know, when I think about old age, I think about it's not how long that I expect to live, Barbara, or how long you're going to live.
Mm-hmm.
It's how long we're going to be healthy.
Mm.
Because, you know, I could spend the last 5 years in bed, you know, drooling and not know who's visiting me. That's not life. I don't want that kind of life. Like I say with my father, he died at 85 of Alzheimer's disease, and he stopped breathing at 89.
Mm.
And he spent those last 4 years, obviously, not knowing. Mm-hmm. I want to know how long I'm going to be healthy. And it helps to know how we're going to die. And this is another reason why talking about death is so important, because only 10% of us, or 1 in 10, are going to go down quickly. When people are asked, well, how do you want to die? Well, plane crash, car crash, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you get up and have a wonderful breakfast, and by dinner you're dead. But only 10% of us are going to go down that way. The rest of us are going to go down slow with chronic disease, dementias, cancer, heart disease. You know, where we live to 80, and then we have a few sort of not so good years, and then we have one or two really bad years. And that's when people disengage from society. That's when they finally say, I'm ready to go. Yeah. I don't want to go out anymore, or whatever. And we need to stop that. We need to make those last years better than we have been. We give up too soon.
We don't have enough services.
Yet. Yeah. We don't have enough services to make them feel better.
Got you. Let's talk to Jim from Norfolk. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Thank you. I am a retired pastor. I've been in ordained ministry 53 years, and I wanted to put a plug in for that intergenerational where older and younger get together, because that's a natural place where that generation is important. In our last parish before retiring, we had 80 people over 80 and 80 people under 10. And that bell curve was a real important thing.
Wow.
But my wife had an idea that was so useful. She sent older teens and young adults out to the over 80s to do a tape recording of some of their memories and their favorite Bible verse, their favorite hymn, and to talk a little bit about their life and how they came to be a part of a faith community. That resulted not only in a book that she published, but it just gave that intergenerational kick. And the people who received the interviewers commented all the time about how upbuilding and encouraging that was to facilitate an intergenerational dialogue. It was wonderful.
Thanks.
And when we retired and left that parish, the next pastor had a file with 80 people's
stories,
synopsis of their life.
That's fantastic. Jim, I hate to cut you off. We're almost out of time, though, and I want to give Carolyn a chance to respond to you. Thanks so much for the call. Carolyn?
Yes, Jim, your wife had a stellar idea. Splendid. I mean, bringing the intergenerational together as soon as they start talking. I mean, you know, it's just wonderful, because a lot of times these older people will talk about when they were that age, teenagers or before, and here's what we did and here's how we did it. And it brings so much understanding. And the other thing is, when you ask them about their favorite song, which a lot of times, by the way, the number one song is Amazing Grace. And the other one is I Walk in the Garden with Thee.
Mm-hmm.
Music. I have seen people with Alzheimer's that are practically catatonic, and you start singing to them like Cab Calloway or something when they were growing up, when they were 15, what was the basic songs they were listening to, and they perk right up. And we've done actual studies that show they need less medication for calming them down if you sing to them, and sing to them the music that they remember from their childhood.
Yeah. So we've got about 2 minutes left. I want to give you a chance to say what you want to people who are either entering their senior years or already there, and encourage them in terms of staying active, staying positive.
Yes. Get your butt out the front door. You've got to do that. It's so important, and especially as you have loss. And also, loss, you need to talk about the loss and what it means to you. I mean, some people will tell you to get over your losses. You don't get over death. You never get over death. You get over the flu. But we live in such a get over it type of society. And what people need to do is to be able to go through their period of grief, which can be anger and all kinds of stuff like that, but going through the grief, that you end up with the person is not bought with you physically, but somehow in a new way, they're still with you. Mm. And so you have to be able to not push this down inside of yourself, but you need to be able to get out and say, okay, I am grieving, or I am scared of death, or I need to have help in this way or whatever. So a lot of times you need to ask for the help that you need. And I think that that's very important, to take the responsibility. It's your aging, and by gum, you can do the best you can with it. It can be a wonderful part of your life, even though it's limited.
Absolutely.
It can be a wonderful part of your life. And so go for it.
So, Carolyn, my birthday was 2 weeks ago. I turned 69. So I've been giving a lot of thought in terms of living life to the fullest. And I so appreciate your book. Where can people find The Sages of Oak Place?
On Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Those are the two big places that you can find it.
Okay.
Yes. And give me feedback if you read it. Go ahead and write in and give me feedback on Amazon, or you can go to carolynstegman.org. carolynstegman.com, which is my website.
Okay. And I will tell you also that there was a request from the production staff that you have it recorded as an audiobook so that they can listen.
Oh, wow.
Get it on Spotify or on Audible or wherever, because the book is wonderful. It is called The Sages of Oak Place, a novel by Dr. Carolyn Stegman. Carolyn, thank you so much for being
Barbara,
our guest
you.
Today. Yes. It has been truly a pleasure to talk with
you,
and I wish you the very best.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you
Barbara,
take care.
It's been a pleasure for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. And audience, before we go today, I do want to remind you of two things. We are going live in the month of August, and we want to see you live and in person with us. The Rosenwald School, we're going to Cape Charles on the Eastern Shore. Everybody over on the Eastern Shore, we're coming August the 6th. That show will be live from the Rosenwald School there. And then on August 27th, we will be back at one of our favorite spots, Fort Monroe. And you will be able, if you come and be a part of the audience, to get a sneak peek in advance of the new African Landing Memorial statue that is being installed, I believe, as we speak. So go to whro.org/events. Register for both if you can, but pick one that you like and come and join us as we take this show out to the community so that you can watch us do the show live and also gain lots of historical perspective, which are some of the things that our audience really, really enjoy. Now, seniors, for our seniors that listen today, we hope that this show inspired you to embrace your older years with joy and wonder. And for those of you who are not yet seniors, hopefully you will consider what you've heard as you make your own choices of how you want to construct your later years. Now, you can listen to this show again or share it with a friend. Just visit whro.org/anotherview and download the podcast. You can also find us on your favorite podcast platform. Next week on Another View, Minority Mental Health and How One Organization is Making a Difference. Our theme music is an original composition created especially for Another View by Jay Sennett. Lisa Godley is our show producer. Jordan Christie is our audio engineer. And Dr. Barry Graham answered our phones. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. Have a fantastic weekend, everyone. And let's get together again next Thursday at noon for Another View.
Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, carrying out your charitable wishes forever. Whether it's helping shelter animals, feeding the homeless, enhancing the arts, or supporting students. Learn more at leaveabequest.org.